everybody. Good to see you out with us here tonight. Got a good number out with us here on a Sunday evening, and it's not lost upon me the other attractions that this world holds that would cause you to miss a service like this, but the fact that you've chosen to forfeit all those things and make the decision to be here and make the effort to be here says a lot about you and your love for God and your understanding what is going to be pleasing to God, and I appreciate that very much. We got a number of visitors with us here this evening, three or four different visitors here tonight. Thank you for being here this evening. Appreciate very much your interest to be out with us here today. We want you to feel like our honored guest at the Clarksville Church of Christ. Hope you'll come out and be with us again and again. We want to remind you and ourselves that all we're interested in is what this sacred volume right here has to say, the Bible. We believe that the Bible is, as it reports to be, the words of God. It is a volume of 66 books where God's mind and His revelation has been revealed to you and I. It tells us why we're here, who He is, what we are to be doing, what He's done for us, what we need to do to get back right with Him, and what we need to do to continue and do all these things that one day we might be able to stay with Him eternally in a place called heaven. And so this evening, as we bring forth our lesson and study from this great book, I'm going to provide you book, chapter, and verse from it for everything I got to say. Utilize the power of the Lord here to my left. And I just recommend and suggest that you write these things down. If you grab the bulletin, you'll find on the inside page, the left-hand side, you'll find an outline, actually, of my lesson here tonight. You'll find strategically that I've left blanks so that you can kind of fill them in, so that you can kind of just stay engaged as you're going through here, so that you can not only study and keep your mind crisp and focused upon the Word of God and what we're wishing to learn here, but hopefully, and I encourage, that you study later, that you continue to study, to see whether these things are so. Don't take my word for it. Study it for yourself. See that these things are so, and if they are, that you make application of those things in view of eternity. In the book of Philippians chapter 1 and verse 25, we had read so well by Brother Jeff a few moments ago, Paul writes and emphasizes our need for continuance. It is of the utmost importance in our lives as children of God, so vital in our progress as Christians, our faith, our growth, and all that we do. Continuance. Continuing. I heard a resolution that will help us meet all these other ideas here this evening. I'd like to share it with you. A resolution that if we make it and apply it, it will help us in our life of continuance as we march toward our Canaan's land. And I have it here before you this evening. I will involve God in all that I do. As we begin a new week, as we close out an old year, that we begin to focus in our mind in regards to spiritual things, that we launch out into the deep, as we've been talking about our theme all this year, that I am going to involve God in all that I do. And if we will do that, we will have continuance. There'll be no stagnation. There'll be no backsliding. I mean, others will know where we stand. Our family will know what is of utmost importance to us. Our co-workers will see Christ in our lives as we make and live this resolution. And it makes no difference what your job is, what your recreational activities are that you enjoy, your hobbies you employ. You need to involve God in all of those things. I mean, well, don't I need a break? I mean, just every once in a while, just I need to kind of be by myself. No, you need to involve God in all that you do. And what I'd like to do here for just the next 17 minutes, 38 seconds or so, is talk about that idea of why. Why is it that you need to involve God in all that you do? The first thing I want to suggest to you is this. It's because you cannot go far enough away to hide from God. Try as we might, we cannot hide from an ever-present eye of God. If His God, as I preached not too long ago, His eye is on the sparrow, then I know He's watching me. Matter of fact, the wise man in Proverbs 5 and verse 21 says, the ways of man are before the eyes of God, and He pondereth all of His goings. Not only is God watching us, but God is pondering. He's pondering the steps that we take, the decisions, the motives that we have in our mind. In Genesis chapter 3, Adam and Eve tried to hide themselves from God. They had not involved God or His Word in their lives, and they knew it. And they thought that they could hide. However, in the book of Hebrews 4 and verse 13, the Hebrew writer said, neither is there any creature that is not manifest in His sight, but all things are naked and open unto the eyes of Him with whom we have to do. There is a reckoning with God. There is going to be an accounting of the books one day. And I need to understand that there is nothing that is hidden from this all-seeing God. And I will involve God in all I do from this time forward because I cannot go far enough away to hide from this God. We've been studying the book of Matthew. In Matthew chapter 6 and verse 5, Jesus there exhorted, "And when thou prayest, do not pray as the hypocrites, for they love to pray standing in the synagogues and the corners of the streets, that they might be seen of men. Verily I say unto you, they have the reward. But when you pray, enter into your closet and shut the door. And when you have shut the door, pray to your Father which is in secret." Now listen, here's the point. "And thy Father which seeth in secret shall reward thee openly." No matter where it is that I go, no matter where it is I hide from my brethren, my friends, my family, my co-workers, or other people that I don't want to see me, you cannot go far enough. You cannot run far enough. There's no place you can go that an all-seeing God is not going to be there. That was the psalmist's dilemma in Psalms 139 verse 7 when he says, "Where shall I go from our spirit? Where shall I flee from thy presence? If I ascend into heaven, you are there. If I make my bed in hell, behold, thou art there. If I take wings of the morning, dwell in the uttermost parts of the sea, even there thy hand lead me, and thy right hand shall hold me. Surely darkness shall cover me, I'll say to myself, but even the night shall be light unto thee. Yea, darkness hideth not me from thee, but the night shines as the day. The darkness as the light are both alike unto thee." In everything I'm going to do, I'm going to involve God, because I cannot hide from him anyway, and he pondereth my goings. We don't do what is right, though, ladies and gentlemen, as you think about this, to be seen of men. We do what is right because it's right. And because God is a part of my life, my actions and my thoughts are going to be right. It was once said, the one thing the present time has over the others, that is the past time or future time, is that the present is our own. You will manage your present. You will judge how you guide your actions, your activities, your direction. And my question to you to ponder here this evening is, will God be involved? If he is, it can only make you better person. It can only make your character become more involved like his. Your thoughts can only become more pure, even more devoted to himself, to God, because you are going to involve God in all that you do. Why should I do that? Because I cannot go far enough away to hide from my God, but also because I cannot go so far away that I cannot be seen by others. Someone is going to see what I'm doing. By nature, we are social beings. I mean, we wish to interact, and at times we cannot or do not interact well with others. We become depressed, and we're not at our best. The alternative to being social beings is being a hermit, and no one really wants to live the hermit's life. Matter of fact, God said in Genesis 2 and verse 18 that it's not good for man to be alone, and with such, we are going to be around other people, and by that, other people are going to see us. Paul said to the young man Timothy in 1 Timothy 4, verse 12, "Let no man despise thy youth, but be thou an example of the believers in word, in lifestyle, in charity, in spirit, in faith, in purity. Let no man despise thee, be thou an example." Our word example comes from two words, ex, meaning out, and sample. And literally, the idea of example literally means a sample out of. Someone's making a big old pot of stew, and I take out a spoon, and I take a sample out of that, and I taste it. I know then what that stew tastes like because I've taken a sample out of it. And I want you to understand that what Paul here is saying by the Spirit of God is that you and I need to be a sample out of what a child of God is to be all about. In what way? In word. By the way that we speak. Our lifestyle, spiritual or carnal? But in love, do we
we love neighbor as ourselves? Do we love God with all of our strength, our soul, and our minds? Our spirituality, I mean, do spiritual things come first to us? Faith, we have substance, that we have a bedrock that we trust. In purity, he says, are we pure from the leaven of the world, or do we have worldliness in us? We are a sample out of God's people when we're talking about being an example. Listen, people are watching you whether you realize it or not. When you open a door for someone, people are watching. How you deal with a stressful situation at work or at a store, people are watching you. They're watching you. Steve Ballou was our preacher after Bob Buchanan in Pekin, Indiana. Mark remembers this well. His good friend was Steve Wolfgang. Both those names may be familiar, or one of them may be familiar to some of you here. They actually was in Clarksville, Indiana, and sometime in the mid-late 1970s, and someone ran a stoplight out here and hit them broadside. It was a terrible accident. Neither one of them, fortunately, were hurt. But people were watching, and afterwards, someone said something. You guys had to be preachers. I never heard you cuss the whole time. But did they know that they were gospel preachers? People were watching. People watch how it is and what it is that you do. You know, you feel so self-conscious. At least I always have. I'm getting better at it as I get older. Maybe it is that I'm just getting so old and tired, I don't have time to worry about what other people think. I don't know, but it's one of those things. When I was younger, I remember I was a little bit younger than Logan. I was up at Purdue, and I was a freshman up there, and I felt so self-conscious. I was trying to avoid the things that we're taught as children to avoid and go worship and things of this nature. And I remember my first roommate was, I'm sure he's a functional alcoholic, and he flunked out the first semester, and now, Greg, I got a second guy. And I remember him well. I think of him often. He's a gentleman named John Powell. And I remember talking to John when we were just making those introductions and things of this nature. And he said, well, I hear you go to church. And that's the last thing in the world I would have thought that anyone would have ever noticed. And he said he was good friends with the RA, which I didn't even know what an RA was. It was a resident assistant at the time. And he said, I'm good friends with him. And he said, well, he kind of keeps to himself, doesn't talk a whole lot, but he goes to church three times a week. People are watching. People are watching. What I want you to understand this week as you begin it, that you have got to involve God in all that you do, because you cannot go behind the cubbyhole far enough. You cannot hide. You cannot fall far enough away that someone is not going to see you. And you've got to understand that people are watching. Paul said that we might be blameless and harmless, the sons of God, without rebuke, in the midst of a crooked and perverse nation, among whom you shine as lights. Let me ask you a question. If the whole church here at Clarksville were judged by your words, or your actions, or your attitude, or your work ethic, or your language, or your dress, how would the church be judged? What I want you to understand is that is exactly how this church is being judged in your circle of the world. Because you cannot go far enough away that someone is not watching. But also I want you to see this. Because you cannot make a wrong right. I mean, so many times we allow ourselves or our family to be involved in sin, and we try to justify it by our own words and our own wisdom. And my friend, sin is sin, no matter who is doing it and no matter what the justification is that we place on it. In Genesis chapter 3, when Adam and Eve, when it was all said and done, got to blaming the snake and blaming God and blaming the woman, they had all sinned. And they all bore the consequences of what it was that they did. David tried to hide his sin with Bathsheba. He had taken another man's wife. May recall, he brought Uriah back and tried to get him to go back to his wife,
spend the night with her. He wouldn't do it.
He brought him back again. He got him drunk this time. And now he's all drunk. He'll go back into the house and be with her, and then the coast will be clear for me. But he was too honorable of a man to do that. And so what did David do? David had him killed. David had him killed so that he can make his wrong seem right. But Nathan came to him and said, "You are the man." Because he could not make the wrong right. One sin just led to another sin. Saul and the Amalekites were supposed to utterly destroy him. He brought back all these animals and things. And, oh, we're going to have a holy day. And we're going to sacrifice all these things to God. Listen, coming here on Sunday doesn't give you a right to sin. And self-justification is no justification at all. And unless we vow and then follow through with, "I'm going to involve God in all that I do," I will find myself more times than not trying to make a wrong right. Sin can affect other things in the future. I mean, you think of the sin of Abraham and Hagar. I mean, God had told Abraham and promised him, "I'm going to give you a son." But Sarah and Abraham were impatient. They thought they needed to give God a little hand. And so he went into Hagar and bore a son, Ishmael. God did give him the child that he promised. His name was Isaac. And now we have the Jewish and Palestinian thing still hating, still fighting, and killing one another. To this day, 2,500 years later, we don't know what the consequences of our sin might be. Don't take a chance. In Numbers 32 and verse 23, you can be sure of this: your sin will find you out. I mean, where did David's sin with Bathsheba go? Everywhere. It went everywhere. And don't miss that. I'm going to involve God in all that I do because I cannot make a wrong right. And finally, because there's going to be trouble in my life. I mean, as sure as I'm standing here tonight and each one of us here are sitting amongst one another, we're going to face troubling times in the remainder of our lives. I mean, Job said in Job 14 and verse 1 that a man is born of a woman is full of troubles. There's a few days and full of troubles. I mean, our life is relatively short. James, we talked about this morning, he says it's like a vapor appears for a little time and vanishes away. And Job says it is full of trouble. Life is full of trouble. And if you've lived the life and you've not had any troubles yet, hang on. Because it's coming. Yea, all that live godly shall suffer persecution. 2 Timothy 3 and verse 12. Jeff read a few moments ago, "In nothing be terrified of your adversaries, which is of them an evident token of destruction, but to you into salvation, and that of God. For unto you it has been given on the behalf of Christ, not only to believe upon Him," now watch it, "but also to suffer for His sake." You have been given the opportunity and the grace and the mercy of God, not only to be able to believe upon His Son, but also to suffer for Him as well. If you try to live a godly life in this world, you are going to suffer. And we must involve God in our lives because the trouble will come our way and it will overtake us otherwise. Finally, brethren, be strong in the Lord and in the power of His might. Paul said, "I can do all things through Christ which strengthens me." It is His power, not my power. It is their power, not our power, that's going to help us overcome the troubles in our life. And I'm going to have to involve God in all that I do. The God that said, "Let there be light," and there was light. The God who said, "I cannot lie, and I promise you that I am your helper, and you will not fear what man will do unto you, for I will never leave thee." I must involve God in all that I do, for the storms of life will come. And it is He that will be our refuge. I will involve God in all that I do. Why? Because I can't go far enough where God's not going to see me. I can't go away where others aren't going to see me. I can't go far enough to where I can make my wrongs right. There's going to be, and I'm going to need God. You know, one of the problems with the Gentiles nations in Romans 1 and verse 28 was that they did not like to retain God in their knowledge. And I fear from time to time that I have done this and that you have done this and maybe you're doing this now. That the only time we think of God is when we're here. We don't involve God in all the things that we do. We forget God. I heard the story one time of a farmer who was particularly jealous of his neighbor farm who just seemed to have a bumper crop that year when he didn't. And rather than to go and ask him if he could have some or buy some of the grain or maybe just to get some information on how maybe he could grow a better crop, he just decided one night, I'm going to go steal some. He took his little boy with him. Got to the middle of that field. He looked ahead of him. Didn't see anybody. He looked back behind him. Looked to the left. Looked to the right. He thought the coast was clear. He reached out for that first ear of corn. And his little boy tugged on his jacket. So he said, Daddy, he forgot to look up. You see, you can't go far enough away. God is not going to be watching. And he's watching us now. He ponders our thinking. He ponders our will. And we extend an invitation to you here this evening. Jesus said, go into the world and preach the good news. He that believes and is baptized shall be saved. That command and that teaching, all the things that Jesus Christ did in dying for the cross and raising from the dead, and holding that word even to this moment for you to hear it tonight at 6:35, October 13, 2019, demands response. It demands a response. It demands a response from each and every one of us. How will we respond? Extend the Lord's invitation unto you. Sing this song to encourage us. So if you're subject to it.